You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you, everybody. Today in studio, Bubba Carpenter. We'll talk about Arkansas baseball. We're going to end the show today with Ethan Westerman from San Francisco to talk about tonight's Sweet 16 matchup and what he learned yesterday during the media day and practice session for the Razorbacks there at the Chase Center. It's a little early on the West Coast right now, so we're going to let him sleep a little bit, and he'll join us here at the end of the show. Bubba and I will talk baseball first. I want to tell you, too, Andrew Harris is going to join us a little bit later. He is a color commentator and former baseball player for Vanderbilt. He'll be on the call for two of the games this weekend at Hawkins Field. We start first with Arkansas's loss to Missouri State on Tuesday night, 14-13 in 10 innings. And Bubba, it felt like one of those deals where if it could go wrong, it did go wrong for Arkansas at the end of that game.
You know, and it wasn't even just the end of the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go back to the first of the game, runner gets on first, we walk him, goes to second on the pass ball, steals third. Colin kind of got into a rhythm, one look in. And scores on a pass ball. So no ball put in play, and we give up a run. You know, and you look at the throw from right, from Kendall. Mm-hmm. You know, Gabe Frazier, not sure what he was jumping for, but he jumped.
I don't think he was paying it. So I want to get your thoughts on this. It looked to me like two things. Number one, Kendall should have hit the cutoff man. I didn't think he had any chance to get that runner at third.
No chance.
And it looked to me like Frazier was more concerned about the base runner and focused on him and not focused on, I don't even know if he knew the ball was coming in from the right field.
You know, I don't know if maybe the runner had him blocked off. Maybe he thought the Heva was going to cut it. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. But, yeah, he jumped. The ball goes into the dugout. We give up another run. So, I mean, we always want to focus on the ninth inning. I focus on what happened before the ninth. I mean, we gave him a few runs that we shouldn't have given him early in the game. And then the ninth inning would have never happened.
Gabe Frazier was playing third for the first time, and it goes to the nature of these midweek games that they're not normal games. You know what I mean? It's where you take a chance on somebody to see what he can potentially give you on the weekend. And I don't know that offensively, and I don't think it hurt Arkansas offensively at all to have Iredell and Thomas and Helfrich sitting out, because Frazier and Becker in the bottom two spots in the order, they end up giving them 7 RBI.
Yeah.
And, you know, but there are those little things like defensively. You know, you wonder about, and I don't think Becker did a bad job, but you wonder about would Ryder or Helfrich have done something different whenever he was behind the plate. It's those little things, like you said, that all kind of add up. And I think people have got to remember that this is not a normal, you know, this is not a normal weekend game that they're playing. Sometimes you've got to take a little bit of a risk on a Tuesday or Wednesday night.
Yeah, I think so. And look, I'm not bashing Gabe Frazier for, you know, jumping. I like you said, I don't think he saw the ball. I really don't. But his grand slam was awesome. His first base hit was just like a little check swing, something in the infield after they shifted over. You know, grand slam was awesome. He was on pace to be the player of the game just because I thought it was really cool, freshman hitting his first home run's grand slam. But things didn't work out that way. And you know, I love Zane Becker. I love the way he swings it. Love his approach at the plate. Seems real advanced for a freshman. You know, behind the plate, I don't know. Honestly, and you can go back and dissect the game and say, well, you don't like this, you don't like this. You know, it goes back to all the negatives. You can pick out 50 negatives, you can pick out 50 positives. I thought we threw some pitches that played into their swings. You know, I watched their BP, Matt, and they were pulling everything. Like the lefties were just launching balls over the Hunt Center. And I feel like when the game started, we threw a lot of pitches that played right into their swings. And, you know, you get a lefty looking to pull the ball. For me, I'm throwing them changeups. I hit that way. I was more of a pull hitter. You throw me a changeup, I'm going to roll over it or miss it. I felt like we were throwing them breaking balls that were breaking right into their barrels, and they were crushing the ball to right field. Rodriguez had probably the game of his life. What, he had five hits?
Five or six.
Two Oppo home runs. But I don't know. It was just it was kind of a frustrating game. Typical Tuesday night game.
And Rodriguez is a good player.
Yeah,
he's
really good.
He's the preseason All Missouri Valley second baseman, and I know the Missouri Valley isn't quite maybe what it used to be in baseball, but I think it's still a pretty good baseball league. And Missouri State's picked to win that conference. I didn't realize that coming into Tuesday night. I started looking that up after the game. They're picked to win the Missouri Valley Conference. They got a lot of older players on their roster. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, they had beaten Bradley the weekend before and run-ruled them in a game, outscored them. Basically, the Bradley series was for them kind of what the South Carolina series was for Arkansas. A lot of lopsided scores, a lot of runs for them. And it just felt like both teams really were able to keep that offensive, you know, hot streak going on Tuesday night. It's just that Missouri State was able to play one more run.
Yeah, and, you know, it's like you said, I can't remember what Dave said exactly, but – you know,
sometimes you've got to lose one to win.
Lose one, there you mm-hmm. go. And that's so true. You know, and it's just, yeah, you know, I feel bad for, you know, Will McIntyre came in and just, you know, couldn't get an out. You know, faced a couple lefties. I wish Cole Gibbler would have been able to get those two lefties out early in the inning. Hung a couple breaking balls in. They pulled the ball down the line, but. You know, I thought overall he looked good. It was one of those games you saw a lot of good things, but then you saw a lot of bad things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the pop-up to Souza, the minute his feet started moving fast, I'm like, oh, no, this isn't good. If you watch a guy, if a ball goes up in the air and his feet start moving like that, that means everything's speeding up, and it just didn't look good from the start. And you hit him that ball 50 times, he catches it, 49 of them. That mm-hmm. was the one that he missed, so –
and, you know, and not to put the loss on him, and that's not what I'm trying to do, but if he catches that ball, I think Arkansas probably wins the game.
Yeah, I think so. That changes everything. Instead of being bases loaded one out, it's, what, first and third, two outs.
Mm-hmm. So and it's instead of it being a two-run game, it's a three-run game. Right. And, I mean, it's just a huge deal, that missed pop-up. And so that's why, even though McIntyre didn't pitch well in the ninth inning, I don't put it all on him because, you know, I mean, he did his job to get that pop-up. Just didn't work out. I thought Cole Gibbler pitched really well, and then, you know, they took him out after a couple of base hits there in the ninth. A lot of people were critical of that, but they – and this goes back to sometimes you have to lose one to win one. They want to use him on Sunday, and if you throw him too much on Tuesday night, you don't have that possibility.
I mean, you look at it, he was at, what, 44 pitches?
Mm-hmm. Which was a season high.
Yeah, I think that was about his limit, you know. And I think Dave even referred to it. They just want him to get those two lefties out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he left a couple breaking balls up, which he hadn't done all night. And, by the way, that slider he throws is nasty. Guys just don't see it. I mean, they're swinging at it, it's bouncing in front of the plate. He's got some carry on his fastballs, so I'm excited about him.
I think they're excited about him too. And there have been some games where it didn't maybe go so well for him, and then there have been some games where it went pretty well. But I think this is more selfishness than anything. But there was a game where if he gets an out, there's a run rule, and then he gives up a hit, and then the run rule doesn't. That was the night of the lightning strike, and then he ended up having to start again the next day. And so it's not that he pitched bad that night; it's just that he didn't get that two-out, two-strike pitch. You know, he didn't get the out there. But they like him; they like him a lot. They like his upside, and I felt like you could see that upside during that stretch where, I mean, seven straight strikeouts. There was one inning where he threw 12 pitches to retire the side. I mean, and I'm not calling him Hagen Smith. Don't get me wrong. He doesn't look like Hagen Smith or anything. But you watch him out there from the left side, and he's getting guys out and 12 pitches and striking them all out. And it's like, well, that's the kind of stuff that Hagen used to do. Yeah. I think it shows you the potential that's there for him.
I think so. And like I said, on his fastball, he's got a little bit of carry on his fastball. I think his go-to pitch is that slider. And, I mean, guys just don't see it. Quick arm, it's hard, little deception there in his delivery. Guys don't pick up the ball well out of his hand. And so, yeah, he's fun to watch when he's going. That he's got that slider going, he's tough.
Let's talk about pitching overall. Because the same group of pitchers that threw Tuesday night against Missouri State and didn't do so well, there was a game a week or two ago where we were writing about, hey, look at all these veteran guys that Arkansas got on Tuesday night and how they shut this team down. So they've done it some, they haven't done it all the time, and that's baseball. I get that. You know, you got Gabe Gackel, who's inconsistent on the mound. You know, Christian Fouts has obviously been struggling with some stuff. But on the other hand, I think you've got Aiden Jimenez, who's, you know, given them more than probably what they expected from him. Carson Wiggins is coming along. You got Parker Coyle who's having the year of his life. I think the other two starters are pitching pretty well right now. Overall pitching, what are your thoughts about this team and where they are right now and maybe where you think they can go?
I think we got I still like our staff. The talent's there. I think it just needs to all come together. You know, you look at what happened on Tuesday night. You know, Bibee wasn't his best. Once again, I thought he couldn't get his changeup over, so he went more to the fastball chain or fastball curveball slider. And once again, it was breaking into the lefty, so they were hitting it hard. Dylan wasn't bad. Tate McGuire came in and did a pretty good job. But if you look at, if you want to go on and look at the weekend guys, the stuff's there. It's just a matter of it all coming together. I still like our three starters. I thought Root looked really good over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Gackle. Even Gackle, if Vejeva makes that one play, he gets out of that inning. You know, he throws to second base. Souza was a little late getting to the bag. If he throws that across the infield, Gackle gets out of that inning. Who knows what happens?
McIntyre and Bibee, they kind of feel like the same pitcher. I know they're different pitchers, but it's like when they can get that second pitch going, they're really hard to stop. And we've seen that over the last couple of weeks and on the weekend too, because McIntyre had a good outing against Ole Miss. Bibee had a good outing against Ole Miss. They both had good outings against South Carolina. But when they're missing, is it the lack of velocity? I mean, like what is it that allows teams to kind of hit them around a little bit when they're missing?
Well, so with McIntyre, he's going to throw 90 miles an hour, let's just say. He's got to be – guys know what he's got. He's got that cutter, and it's a really good pitch. It's a plus pitch. He's got to be able to throw the fastball in on the righties. Then he can get them out with the cutter away. Or show them the cutter away and then get them out with the fastball in. Bibee – and for me, if you're pitching to righties, I think they're pretty good against the righties. Against the lefties, I think you got to use the changeup. We talked about it last week. I view everything from the lens of the batter's box. So if you're a right-handed pitcher and you're throwing me fastball, breaking ball, you're doing me a favor. Now, throw me a changeup, and that changes my plan. Hmm. But if I don't have to worry about a changeup, outer third, I'm hunting a zone. I'm looking to do damage because everything's coming right into my barrel.
And Bibee throws harder than McIntyre does. Mm-hmm. I think a couple of years ago they were kind of on the same track, but Bibee's velocity's taken a little bit of a jump up. I want to go back to resting, like Ryder Helfrich, for instance, or giving Brent Iredell the day off, at least for a little while. He ended up coming into the game at the end. The importance of rest for players this time of year, do we put too much emphasis on it? How needed is it? Because it's different than Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball, you're playing, six games a week most weeks?
Mm-hmm.
You may only be playing four, like this week in college, but then again, that's probably as much baseball as you've ever been accustomed to playing. What do you think about the rest and the value of it this time of year?
Yeah, I think it depends on your health. If you're a guy like Maxwell, you're struggling with a hamstring, a day off's probably good. But when I played, I would tell the manager, whoever it was at the beginning of the season, look, I don't need a day off. I hated days off. I would come back after a day off feeling worse than I did. I wanted to play every game. Mm. A day off just didn't do me – I don't know. I didn't like it. And I think some guys are different. Some guys want to play every day. I think Vejeva wants to play every day. Yeah, I'm pretty sure like Iredell, he looks like a guy who wants to play every day, dabbling. I think you got a lot of guys – well, there's a lot of guys on the team, Kozio. I bet all those guys, they want to play every day. So I guess in answer to your question, it depends on health. But I hated days off.
I forgot to ask about this yesterday when we were talking to Dave. Iredell, did you see him in the bullpen?
Yes, I did.
Well, that kind of interesting?
Well, I think he was just messing around. He was getting loose.
Because he was about to come in as a defensive
replacement. Yeah, he was coming in as a defensive replacement. But I told Phil that. I didn't have my binoculars. I'm like, that's Iredell. He's on the mound. Mm. And then I thought, okay, he's just getting loose to come into third. But I think he got up on the mound and maybe threw a couple pitches. But, once again, we were, five runs up at the time?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very interesting. So they were able to practice yesterday. They had a practice middle of the day, too. And I think that there's probably a little bit of value in that, that, you know, they were off the field by like 130, 140 yesterday and able to kind of have a night to themselves. I asked Dave during the Zoom conference yesterday on the value of being able to practice during this time of year when teams don't necessarily get a whole lot of practice time, and this is what he had to say about it.
Well, you know, today was really the first time we've been able to really work on things. Example, you know, bunk coverages and first and third situation, rundowns, cutoff relays, just those type of things where, you know, when you're playing five games a week, Monday's your off day, you play Tuesday, Wednesday, and then Thursday, last Thursday we traveled and you're working at a different field. You have to try to figure out exactly what you want to go over. A lot of times what you do is you just talk about it. Today we were able to walk through some things, discuss some things, and you know, maybe feel a little bit better about when it happens in game that we're ready to handle it.
Practice, you know, I always feel like the teams at the end of the year, that's when you start to see the little things start to show up on the field a little bit more, and that kind of dovetails with when you don't have midweek games anymore and you're able to get out there and practice on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. What do you think the value is of them being able to practice like they were able to yesterday?
You know, I think it's huge when you've got a guy like Cam Kozel playing first base. You know, you can go over first and thirds, you can go over cutoff relays, you can go over, you know, bunt coverages. You know, because he's still learning first base. Mm-hmm. And I thought he's done a great job. I really do. I watch his footwork. You know, the days of it used to just take a big donkey that can hit and throw him over there at first base. Now, I mean, you got to have an athletic first baseman. People don't realize how much is involved, how much a first baseman can change a game. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, whether it's picks in the dirt or just, you know, just coming to field a bunt. You look at how many times have we hit a ball or bunted a ball just to the first base side of the pitcher's mound? The first baseman and the pitcher both go to the ball, no one's on the back.
Right.
I mean, there's – and just –
saw it twice last week.
Right. And just knowing as a first baseman how far off the bag to go, know where the second baseman is. There's so many things a first base has to know. So I think when you've got a guy like him learning a new position, I think a practice day is huge. For the outfielders, yeah. You know, they're doing their thing. They've got it under control. But I think for the infield, it helps a lot. Maybe pitchers, PFPs, and stuff like that. Just holding runners. There's a lot of little things. Like you said, it goes back to the little things that add up, and you really see them at the end of the season.
Also asked yesterday about an update on Gage Wood and Hunter Dietz from Van Horn. I told him I'm trying to keep this to one question a week about both of them. I don't want to be asking about it too much. But, you know, Wood, when he first went out, the thought was 3 to 6 weeks. We're getting toward the back end of that six-week period. So, you know, maybe the thought is that he's getting close. This is what he had to say, though, about those two injured Arkansas pitchers.
Gage seems to be getting better. You know, it's all about him getting his arm back in shape. He does not have any pain. Now it's like building him up. We can put him in a game, excuse me, or throw to some hitters first and then put him in a game. But I think he's on his way. You know, with Hunter, he's just – it's not going great, honestly. He doesn't have the command and the velocity and that he had before the injury. So, still really don't know what to tell you there.
That doesn't sound promising on Hunter Dietz pitching this year. It seems like, you know, he got to the point where he's facing live hitters, and for about 2 or 3 weeks now – the updates on him have just kind of been stuck in neutral.
Yeah, it's not good. But you know what? How refreshing is it for Dave? You know you're getting a real answer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he could have danced around it, you know, but he's honest about it. I love that about him. But it is disappointing to hear that. And you kind of feel it because there's nothing's changing, but on Gage, that's good news.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I don't think there's any need to rush Gage, you know, right now. Yeah, we'd love to have him, but I want him healthy in June when it really matters.
I feel bad for Dietz.
I do too.
I always feel bad for those pitchers who, you know, they could have done, you know, really well for themselves in the draft, and then they can, and I hope that he does well for himself in the draft down the road whenever it comes his time to go again. But I think about like a Keaton McKinney who came here, and I mean, he turned down close to $1 million could have been a first, second round draft pick, and he never got drafted again because he had to have two Tommy John surgeries. This is a different injury, but boy, I really hope for his sake he can turn it around. I just kind of hate what's happened for him.
Yeah, I think he will, and he's in good hands. I mean, you know, he's got the right guys around him to get him back. Mm-hmm. I think it'll happen. It just sometimes it takes longer.
Yeah. Until you can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at WholeHogSports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at WholeHogSports.com. When we come back, Andrew Harris, who is a color commentator for the Vanderbilt SEC Network Plus broadcast, will join us to talk about the Commodores. But first, a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971. Committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at BentonvilleGlass.com. Arkansas at Vanderbilt this weekend. The Razorbacks ranked number 2. The Commodores are number 13 in the coaches poll. They'll play Friday night at 7 o'clock. That game's going to be on SEC Network with Tom Hart and Chris Burke on the call. And then they'll play Saturday and Sunday afternoon, Saturday at 2, Sunday at 1. And our next guest, Andrew Harris, will be on the call for those games. He is a former Vanderbilt baseball player, played for Coach Tim Corbin, and he's the color analyst for the SEC Network Plus broadcasts. Andrew, good morning. Appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hey, so tell us about Vanderbilt and the type of season that they've had so far.
Yeah, they're playing really good ball right now. Pitching wise, I mean, 8th in the nation in ERA. I mean, they're getting a lot of strikeouts. I think they're like 12.7 strikeouts per 9 innings. Their weekend starters are looking really good. JD Thompson, Friday night guy, has been good. Cody Bowker is a transfer from Georgetown, has been the Sunday guy, and he's had some really good outings. And then the bats are really starting to pick it up as well as we start to get a little bit warmer.
Now tell me, they did something a little bit different last week, didn't they, whenever A&M came to town? Because it was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, didn't they change their rotation?
Yeah, Connor Fennell was kind of the story last week against A&M. They pitched him because with the Thursday start, they wanted to keep JD Thompson in his normal routine. And, I mean, he went against one of the top arms in the country in Ryan Prager. Mm-hmm. And that kid just came right after A&M. I mean, he gets a lot of swing and miss on the fastball, and it's only, you know, 88 to 90, and he's got a big slider as well. So I think you'll probably see JD Thompson stick in that Friday slot, and maybe Bowker stay in that Sunday slot. But the Saturday slot, I don't know if Fennell, I don't know, he might slide in there.
Just tell us about, if you would, the A&M series in particular, because Vanderbilt lost to Auburn. I think it was a pretty close rubber match, right?
Right.
Auburn beats them 2-1 in the SEC opening series, and then A&M comes in there. And I know A&M's scuffling right now, but still, to sweep that team, I thought really stood out to me last week.
Yeah, Auburn was a tough one for the Commodores. Sunday looked like they were getting ready to take the series, but had a grand slam late in the game that, you know, just weren't able to get it done. And so they really had to regroup against A&M, who, yeah, they look at the record and they are kind of scuffling. But pitching wise, I mean, they're really, really good. The offense has just struggled to get going. And going back to Fennell, I mean, he gave up a early 2-run home run to Jace LaViolette. And it looked like A&M was going to start to break out of it. But Fennell was able to shut him down and really set the tone for the weekend. And it was just a testament to that whole team. The Sawyer Hawks, Alex Kranzler, a lot of the guys coming out of the pen did a really good job against that lineup as well. And then, yeah, the bats just got some timely hits against a really good pitching A&M team. So I think if you're Tim Corbin and Scott Brown and Jason King, you're feeling really good about some of the guys competing at the SEC level.
As I look at the Vanderbilt offensively, I see a lot of names that are familiar: Riley Nelson, Jacob Humphrey, R.J. Austin, who I think is really good. I was talking to Mark Etheridge from D1 Baseball the other day. He said, really keep an eye on Brody Johnston. He thinks that might be the future of the program. Those players in particular, because they've been the top hitters this year, but just offensively in general, what have you thought about this Vanderbilt team?
Yeah, you've had R.J. Austin hitting at the top of the lineup for most of the year. He's the spark plug. I mean, he's really exciting to watch. He can do a lot of stuff at the plate, and he's got double digit steals as well. Jacob Humphrey has started to hit the ball really well as well. He was not really in the lineup much last year. He was injured a good amount last year, and so him being at the top of the lineup, also with double digit steals, so if those guys get on base, they're going to wreak havoc. But you mentioned, yeah, Brody Johnston, highly touted out of high school, and he has been as advertised. I mean, he just seems like he hits everything. He does not look like a freshman standing there in the box.
I've always thought Vanderbilt's one of the toughest places to play in the SEC, and it's one of the smallest ballparks. What's it seat? Maybe 3,000-4,000 somewhere in there.
Yep.
But it's just such a unique setting. You got the turf. A lot of teams don't play on turf anymore. I think Vanderbilt does a really good job of, number one, recruiting to that, the type of players who kind of can play their brand of baseball, on that surface. What do you think makes Vanderbilt such a difficult place to play? Because, you know, I look at it this year, I was reading in the Tennessean that 16-0 at home is thought to be their best start they've ever had at home.
Right.
It's been a place at Arkansas, I think it's been 15 years since they've gone in there and won a series. It's just a very unique place that I think probably sneaks up on some people in terms of it being an intimidating, really good home field advantage.
Right. With the turf surface, I mean, my last year was the first year of the turf, so I really got to know the difference between the natural surface and the turf surface at Hawkins Field. It's a faster surface. As an infielder, you got to get a good first step, and the ball's right on you. But as a fan, I mean, you are right on the players. There's not a lot of foul territory. So as a hitter, it's a great place to hit because you're not going to get a lot of foul ball outs. But yeah, it's a very close confines, and yeah, you just gotta be ready to go.
What have been your impressions of Arkansas as you've scouted the Razorbacks and gotten ready for the series?
I mean, obviously always very well coached and do the little things well. I'm really excited to watch the Aloy brothers. I was able to talk to Vahiva last spring during the SEC tournament, and just seemed like a really good guy and excited to play for the Razorbacks. And he was talking a lot about his brother at the time. I guess it was in the spring and the season he was having at BYU. Mm-hmm. And so for you guys to be able to get both of them together and for them to be having the years that they are, they just play with such freedom and excitement and fun. And I think that's what a lot of times kids playing lose when they go higher up into college and the professional level. And it seems like they just play with such enjoyment. So I'm really excited to watch them. And I'm also excited to see Cam Kojal come back to Vandy and play against, you know, some of his former teammates. Always excited to see former guys come back. And I know he's had a great year. He's moved over to first base, it looks like. So excited to see him move around the bag as well. And then also just excited to see the Vandy hitters. How do they do against Arkansas pitching? And this is, you know, another weekend in the SEC. There's more data on a lot of these guys. So how are they going to adjust? How are they going to execute, with another great SEC bullpen and starters coming in?
I'm glad you brought up Kozel because I was going to ask about him. You and I talked about him last summer. For those who remember, Andrew was an executive producer on the Cape Cod documentary that was on ESPN+. And we were talking about Cam because that was right around the time that he had made the decision to transfer here. Why do you think he left Vanderbilt, number one? And what do you think, like what did you see from him last year, maybe compared to what you're seeing from him in probably, I would assume, a minimal amount of time that you've been able to watch him?
Yeah, I mean, I remember last year, I mean, Cam obviously could hit. I mean, that was he had really good bat to ball skills, and he was a great defender as well. And then I'm not going to speculate on exactly like why he left, but I just think there's in this day and age, like there might be other opportunities elsewhere. I know that Vandy had recruited a couple of other infielders, and so Cam might have said, "Hey, I'm going to go over to Arkansas." I know that Coach Van Horn had recruited him heavily out of high school, and that's just kind of the world we live in. There's opportunities elsewhere, and it's just tough to keep players now. But yeah, it looks like he's having a great year, still swinging it well. I'm excited to see him at first base.
Yeah, Dave Van Horn's told me a number of times. He said, "You don't ever want to burn your bridges after you lose a guy initially to a team, because you never know whenever you might be recruiting him again." I think a lot of coaches have probably had that type of experience, especially here in the last few years. It seems to me that the matchup this weekend is Vanderbilt. I think they've got the lowest opposing batting average of any pitching staff in the SEC, just 188. The teams are batting against them, against this Arkansas lineup that's been so good. What do you think the key is there for both sides?
I think it's just like straight talent. I mean, the stuff of a lot of these guys is elite. And it is interesting to see how these rotations have been created. And you look at, for Vandy, JD Thompson played a lot last year, but not in like a ton of long stints. So he's being able to go out there and get some longer action. Cody Bowker was a transfer from Georgetown, so he came through the portal as well. And then for Arkansas, I mean, you've got Root from ECU, so he came in through the portal. Beidelschies, he came in through by way of Ohio State, and then Gackle, I mean, is a guy that was good for y'all last year. So you kind of got a mix of historic presence, but then also some new guys. But yeah, the stuff is really elite. You get a lot of swing and miss, and it feels like every single weekend here in the SEC, you just see future big leaguers out there on that mound.
Andrew, let's get you out of here on this. If someone were to have booked their first plane flight to Cape Cod, as I just did a couple of days ago, what would you suggest when you go out and watch Cape Cod League baseball in the summer?
I would say try and see as many of the parks as possible. That's the beauty of that league up there, is that they're all so close together. And you can see a lot of games at once. And in each of the parks has such their own character. You've got Chatham, which is far east. It's nestled kind of right in the middle of the town. You can go to dinner, go right to the game. And then you've got Bourne, which is all the way on the east side. And they get a great turnout, a lot of good local passion, a lot of great fans. There's just each one of the parks has such great character. So I would say try and go to as many of those as possible. And then it doesn't matter what you do during the day, you're going to have great food and beaches, and yeah, you can't go wrong.
Told my wife the other day, I said, we're going to watch this documentary again, because I thought you guys did such a great job of kind of telling the story about each of the local or some of the local communities there on Cape Cod. So I'm looking forward to rewatching that, and can't wait to get up there and see Cape Cod this summer. Andrew Harris, Vanderbilt SEC Network Plus broadcast. Andrew, we appreciate you taking time to talk to us this morning.
Great. Thank you, guys.
All right. Appreciate you. Bubba Carpenter back with me now. Bubba, Vanderbilt is they're always one of those teams that I feel like they just test your discipline. And I look at the stats, and one of the things that jumps out to me is that these are the two best fielding teams in the SEC. Fielding on turf is a little bit different than fielding at Baum.
Well, and they're a team that never gives you anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got to earn everything you get, and if you make a mistake, they take advantage of it. And, going to Vandy, it's always a tough place to play. I didn't realize it'd been, what'd you say, 15 years?
I think it's been 15 years is what somebody told me the other day. Now, I haven't looked that up, but I was on a radio show earlier this week, and they told me that it had been 15 years since Arkansas had won there, and I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough place to play.
They should have won there 2 years ago. Arkansas won game one on Thursday night. It was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday because it was the end of the regular season. I was there. And then on Friday, Arkansas was up 8-2 going into the eighth, and then just an absolute meltdown. Eight-run inning for Vanderbilt. In fact, it was the biggest blown late inning lead until the other night against Missouri State.
Yeah, I remember that game. That was a tough one. Yeah. Tough to watch.
it was, and that's what kept Arkansas from, because they won that game, they were going to win the SEC outright.
Right.
And then they ended up having to split it with Florida. It was a weird deal. One of the reasons I don't travel a ton during the regular season. I typically try to go to a couple of weekends. But one of the reasons I went to that one was because I was going to, you know, hey, they're going to win the SEC outright. I'm going to get a nice story out of this. And then it was like this really subdued reaction. If you remember, they left Nashville on a Saturday night and drove down to Hoover. And it was like another day or two before, you know, the coaches said, hey, we won the SEC. We need to celebrate this. Just because it was weird. It was like they won the SEC, but they didn't feel like they had won the SEC because – of the way the season had ended.
Well, it's tough when you lose a game like that. But, I mean, you won the SEC. You got to celebrate it. But, and yeah.
It goes back to that whole they all count one game.
Yep.
You know, and it doesn't matter if you go 1-2 this week or 2-1 or 3-0 or you don't want to go 0-3. But at the end of the season, it's all about who has the best combined record.
Yeah, and, you know, it goes back to look at Missouri State. If we go to Vandy and win the series, everyone's going to forget about the mm-hmm. Tuesday night. I mean, it's
until they play up there again next month. Everybody's going to remember that game again.
Yeah, good point.
You know, Arkansas's never – I won't say they played poorly in Springfield, but it's always been kind of one of those places where they've had a little bit of struggles. Now they got some momentum, or they've got some motivation going up there on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, I said in the keys to the game before we played Missouri State, you know, I said don't overlook these guys. Because I think for them, they come in here and there's – I don't know if there's a – not a rivalry, but I don't think they like us. And I think they play mm-hmm. different against us. They were 10-12 coming in. They didn't play like a 10-12 team. So – and it's hard because we're getting ready to go to Vandy. You just can't overlook Missouri State.
I have a feeling that Missouri State looks at Arkansas, and it's different because it's non-conference. I have a feeling, though, it's probably kind of like you guys used to look at Texas when you played. They're the team you play every year. They've got everything. You're thought to be the underdog, and you want to go show them what's up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's deeper than that. I hated Texas, so, yeah.
Well, they may hate Arkansas.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people have – and it wasn't Arkansas's fault. It was nobody's fault. I think there's a lot of people who still think it was Arkansas's fault that Missouri State didn't get a super regional that year, that they were a national seed, and there's some deep – see, you know, some resentment there because of that.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you're right.
And Joey Hawkins was on that team, Missouri State's coach.
Yes, he was.
He talked it up when I talked to him on Monday. He said, this is a great game. He said, we're going to make sure our players are excited to play it. It was a series that I was always excited to play. And then he told Christine after the game Tuesday night, he said, I don't think there's a better baseball series out there than Arkansas, Missouri State. He said, I know they're SEC. I know they're mid-major. He said, but we seem to bring the best out of each other whenever we get together and play.
I mean, you look at some of the guys they threw. I mean,
they're weekend guys.
They threw a weekend. Yeah, they threw
now,
a weekend guy.
I will say this about Missouri State, and I didn't realize this until this week. They've only got 30 players on their roster. They've got a Title IX issue at Missouri mm-hmm. State to where – they have to make their baseball roster smaller in order to come into accordance with Title IX. It could be a fact that I think FCS football teams, they get fewer scholarships than FBS teams do. I don't know if that plays a factor in it at all, but I could see where maybe it does. But it's 30 players. And you saw a lot of them were two-way guys. The guy who came in and lost his mind when he got that last out was their left fielder.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when you're just dealing with 30-man rosters. I mean, it's I don't know how many players they use that night. Probably
they
use
20. They use 20, yeah.
So,
I mean, and I think a couple of them they use both ways.
Right.
Yeah, so they really had to – hey, no wonder it meant so much to them. They got a little bit of they don't have the things that Arkansas has. They don't have the 40-man mm-hmm. roster. And, you know, so – but Arkansas got a chance to go back up there.
Yeah.
Going back to Vanderbilt, what do you see when you look at this team, at least statistically?
When you look at Vandy?
Yeah.
You know, it's a typical Vandy team to me. They pitching's really good. I mean, you look at the numbers, you know, in conference, out of conference, it's really good numbers. I think you referenced that 188 allowed opponent batting average. That's pretty good. I mean, it's leading the conference. I think Tennessee's 190, I think, is their opponent batting average. But then you get in conference, it's still really good. A ton of strikeouts. But, you know, they don't – hitting-wise, I mean, they're not a home run hitting team. I mean, they've only hit 22 home runs on the year. So they're not going to hit a lot of home runs, but they're not a home run hitting team. They're going to put the ball in play, use the turf to their advantage, and that's kind of the team I always see them being.
The batting average, by the way, Vanderbilt and Tennessee are 1-2 nationally. They both are at 188. Vanderbilt's pitchers have thrown two more innings than Tennessee's pitchers have. So this is, you know, by at least by that metric, the best pitching staff in the country.
Yeah, but they haven't faced a Razorback lineup.
That's very true. I mean, they faced an A&M lineup that people thought would be hitting like Arkansas is now, but they're not.
Yeah.
And Auburn, you know, they're not hitting at that level. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm very intrigued because I think this is one of those weekends where it's like a show-me weekend for both of these teams.
You know what I like, Matt? I like looking at the SEC stats and seeing us leading the SEC in hitting.
Is it 369?
369, I believe, is what it is. So,
because you don't see that very often, or you haven't seen that.
Yeah, you haven't seen it in recent years. It's always been, we've always led in pitching and in hitting. We've been, you know, in the middle to lower third. And to see us up top, I mean, it's early. We've only played two series in South Carolina. I don't know that their staff is that good. A&M or Ole Miss, it's hard to say. But, yeah, it's still good to see us up there. I mean, we've been banging the ball all over the park. And then pitching's been doing okay.
Charles Davelin, I think, is really kind of the key to what Arkansas's done offensively. He's hitting close. He's in like 550, I think, over the last 11, 12 games. It's something crazy.
Yeah,
what he's doing at the plate. Had another three-hit game the other night. He may have had a three-run game, too. I don't know. There were so many runs that were scored in that game. But he has really been leading Arkansas offensively. This is what Dave Van Horn had to say about Davelin yesterday.
First off, his confidence through the roof. He's swinging at strikes. You know, he might swing at the borderline high fastball, but he has a knack for getting on top of that and hitting it to the opposite field and hitting it hard. Just been such a tough out. You know, and there's a threat of power. Obviously he can hit it over your head, over the fence, but he'll also just slap a ball through a hole if he has to with two strikes, and you love to see that. But you know, he tweaked his stance more than a month ago or whatever it was, and you know, just kind of closed up, and you know, maybe it felt awkward at first, but now it's natural and it looks natural, and I think it helps him use the whole field better, and there takes a lot of the timing out of that front leg, you know. So it's been good to watch.
I was talking to Nate Thompson the other day about Davelin and the leg kick and getting rid of it, and he said, I don't think you can dispute that's when things started to turn around for him. But then he was talking to me about Davelin. He said, but I want to say this. He said, Ryder Helfrich. I want to talk about Ryder Helfrich and what he's been doing. And when the hitting coach is saying, hey, I want to – he is voluntarily bringing this up to you. It really makes your ears perk up. And, you know, I mean, you look at Helfrich's numbers over the last week. He's 8-for-15. He had never had a multi-hit game until last Tuesday, and now he's got three. This guy is really seeming to turn it on. Like we thought he would hit whenever he came back from Cape Cod last summer, and he had torn it up there. He just hadn't done it to this point in time, but – it seems like the light may have come on for him here in the last four or five games.
Yeah, I think so. And I know he's worked really hard. And, you know, Ryder Helfrich reminds me of a guy named Kurt Pisker that played with us back in the day. Mm-hmm. And he's just a real, like, I'd walk by Kurt and go, because he was just, I mean, he was always, like, ready to go.
Yeah.
That's what I see in Ryder. And, you know, for a while there, he was hooking everything foul. So I look at I'm one of those, you control the knob, you control the barrel. So, and I watch his knob kind of go outside, a little bit outside the ball. So he ends up hooking balls down the left field line. Now he's starting to get inside those balls. Had a really good base hit the right over the weekend, hit a couple home runs. had a pitch he was a little out front on, but he stayed through the ball. Mm-hmm. Still hit a home run, only hit it 95, but it was a left center home run. You start to see him come around, and that's huge right there in that lower part of the lineup, you know, hitting in that seven hole. It's huge. And I tell you what, I know Nate's super excited about him, and we're all excited about Helfrich. I mean, the guy's got a chance to be a stud. I mean, he is a stud, but once he figures it all out, I see the ceiling for him being really high.
Dave Van Horn said yesterday that Arkansas's rotation is not changing for this series. Now, he didn't go so far as to say they would throw him in the same sequence, but I think that's probably what will end up happening. We haven't had the rotation given to us as of the time that we're recording this yet. Root threw well last week. I don't think anybody's worried about him. Beidelsees, teams are hitting him kind of hard every now and then. Like I didn't like how the first inning went for him last week because there was the home run, but then there was also a sac fly to center. There was a 111-mile-an-hour single up the middle. But then he turned it on at the end. It seemed like he gets better as the outing goes on. Gackle's the one I think that, you know, obviously all eyes are going to be on this weekend. And I feel like it's a big weekend for him if he gets to stay in the starting rotation. If he has another, you know, 2-3-inning type performance, I think it'll be pretty hard to justify keeping him in the rotation moving forward.
Boy, I don't know, Matt. It's you look at Gackle's; his numbers are still there. Like his velocity. Analytics, the velocity's there. His slider. The only thing, he's just not locating it. Honestly, I wish he would throw a few more curveballs. It goes back to, you know, how everything plays off everything else. You know, I know he likes his slider. I think he's best when he's working that slower curveball and not just going fastball slider. As I think he has a tendency to lean on that slider a little too much, where that slower breaking ball, if you can use that, he throws it, you know, low 80s, then come back with that mid 90s fastball, boy, it'll jump up on you. So hopefully he'll get to where he can land that breaking ball a little bit more. But the stuff's still there, and I just feel like I said, if one play, he gets out of that inning, who knows? It might have been like the Ole Miss start where he got going again, and he just never could quite get. And honestly, I don't blame it on the umpire ever. I try not to. I thought he got squeezed. Mm-hmm. I really did. I even asked Helfrich after the game, you know, hey, was he getting squeezed a little bit on that inside to the right?
You're missing your track man.
Yeah, I needed track man up there, but I really thought, yeah, it sucks not having a strike zone. That's so stupid. I don't get that. But we're the only, anyway, SEC is the only league in the nation doing that, but whatever. But I really thought he got squeezed inside. And you take a couple of those fastballs into the righties that got called balls, that could change the whole outing.
What do you think's going through Cam Kozel's mind this week?
You know, he's so hard-nosed. I mean, I guarantee he wants to go in there and have a good series. I don't think he's a guy that's going to get mental and try to do too much. I think he's he knows how to go out and control himself, and I think he's going to have a great series. And
you think he can find a fishing spot in the middle of downtown Nashville?
If there's one around, I bet he'll find it.
He'll have a nose for it. Apparently, he was out there fishing before the game the other night against Missouri State.
Yeah, I talked to Clay Henry, and I guess he got him hooked up a little bit of fishing gear, and so they went and tried it out in the pond, caught some fish. So, you know, he loves to fish, but I think he loves playing baseball more. I love watching him play the game. Hard nose, not what you would expect from a Vandy boy, a former Vandy boy.
Arkansas Texas Tech basketball tonight. I'm not going to ask you for a key to the game. I've gotten over this. So two questions. Number one, will you be up when the game ends at about midnight?
No, I'm always up.
Okay. Number two, what's your favorite Arkansas Texas Tech baseball memory?
Wow. You know what? I remember Texas Tech being really close. I don't remember a whole lot about Texas Tech. I remember them being really close. You mean back in the day? Yeah, I remember going there, and everything was really close. It's kind of like Vandy, to be honest with you. You're always really close. Stands are right there. The fans are right on top of you. It was always fun to go there and play. I loved hitting there. It's a good place to hit.
Yeah, without a 70-mile-an-hour wind back behind you.
Yeah, yeah. Got to love that.
All right, Bubba, appreciate you being here.
Appreciate it. Go Hogs.
All right. We'll have Bubba back on Monday to talk about Arkansas and Vanderbilt after that series over in Nashville. When we come back, Ethan Westerman's going to join us from San Francisco, but first a word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. Arkansas and Texas Tech playing in the Sweet 16 tonight at Chase Center in San Francisco. A 9:09 p.m. Central tip-off time is scheduled. Now, that assumes that Florida and Maryland play for 2 hours, and I think we kind of know how college basketball goes. It might be a little bit later than that when Arkansas and Tech get underway tonight. Ethan Westerman's in San Francisco. Ethan, you were at the media day yesterday at the shoot-around for the Razorbacks there inside Chase Center. What stood out to you?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's hard to it not stand out when you walk into an NBA arena that just has Steph Curry plastered over everything. So that's kind of cool whenever you walk in. It's such a stark difference from this time last week, like being in Providence to being in San Francisco. I don't know if we could have gotten two just – number one, they're on the complete opposite sides of the country. And just the vibes here, it's just such different cities. But it was cool going in that arena. I mean, these days that are practice, I always say practice, you know, with air quotations, because it's really they're just getting shots up. I think that media got to view 15 minutes of the practice. I think they practiced an additional maybe 45 minutes to an hour with closed curtains. We couldn't see stuff. So maybe they got into more stuff then that they couldn't touch on the day prior whenever they practiced at San Francisco, the university here. I mean, from what we saw, I mean, the number one thing that stood out was that Adu Thiro was not participating, which kind of came as a surprise given the fact that John Calipari said he'd be available to play against Texas Tech, and there were photos of him practicing the day before. So, you know, it seems like just, you know, the leg, maybe some soreness comes back up and doesn't want to, you know, favor it too much. But it just, yeah, it's just weird if the day before you can't kind of do just a glorified shoot around, to be honest.
Do you think Thiro plays tonight?
I mean, of course, after John Calipari said that he'd be available, I thought he'd play. But after yesterday, I'm kind of putting it down to like a as needed. Like, say they get into foul trouble like they had against St. John's, yes, I think he would. But if they don't, I don't know if they'll push it. It just was different not having him, you know, different from what I expected, not having him out there getting shots up. Because, and there were a lot of people out there saying stuff like, oh, this is just Calipari not playing a game of chess, just wanting to, you know, make Texas Tech have to wonder if he's going to play. I'm like, y'all don't get that a guy like him, if this is their day to get shots up in the gym they're going to play in tomorrow, he would be getting shots up right now if he felt like he could / wanted to. I mean, it's your one day to get kind of used to that arena. So I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't play. I also wouldn't be shocked if he played like 5 to 10 minutes, though. So we'll see.
I think it's a totally different thing than what happened with Boogie Flan, because Boogie Flan, there was a period that he was able to sit out and heal that surgery. I think what's going on with Thiro is I think it's a more serious injury than what's being, you know, what it was originally called a hyperextension. You hyperextend your knee. I don't think you sit out for this long. It's been over a month now since he had that injury against Missouri. I think he's trying to play through more pain than, say, what Boogie Fland was able to do whenever, you know, it's at the back end of however many week recovery period.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the term in the NBA is the load management, of course. So you wonder if just not practicing yesterday was a little bit of that. It just was strange to me just because the nature of it wasn't really like your normal practice. It was more just like, yeah, getting shots up, getting loose, getting a feel for the rims and the arena. That's why it stood out to me that he wasn't practicing. Because it just seems like the moment that you would definitely want him to at least get some shots up. And maybe he did. We only got to see 15 minutes. But from what we saw, he didn't practice. And then John Calipari talked to reporters after their practice and said that he didn't practice. So I'm assuming that means the whole time. But, you know, maybe it's, yeah, just low management trying to get him ready for today.
So Arkansas is the underdog at this point. They're the lowest seeded team left in the tournament. Christina and I had a long conversation yesterday about this. It kind of, I don't know, it maybe not rubs me the wrong way. It just I feel uncomfortable when teams or when I hear people call Arkansas Cinderella, because it just I don't feel like this is a Cinderella team when you're, you know, you've got a high payroll, you've got multiple players who are going to play in the NBA, you've got a Hall of Fame coach, and you finished, you know, in the upper half or right at in the upper half of what a lot of people think is the best conference in the history of college basketball.
Yeah, I mean, they finished right there in the middle, like, with all those teams that made the tournament. It's like, you know, I don't know. It's just that their seed beside Arkansas's name doesn't resemble the team that it's been since February. And I think we all know that the teams that are hot at the end of the year are the teams you don't want to play. And sometimes what you do at the beginning of the year changes what your seed is going to be. It is a weird situation where Arkansas is, like, you know, a double-digit seed, which – in theory makes them, you know, this big underdog, this big, you know, like, just Cinderella story, you would think. But, like, because it's Arkansas, it's just not. I mean, with the talent they have, with the roster they have, with the NIL they have, all those factors, it's more like the reason that they're an underdog and, like, kind of that feel-good Cinderella story is just what all they've been through this year, I think. Like, I don't even think it's necessarily what their resume was or what they're seeded. It's just what they've been through. But they're definitely not your normal Cinderella. I mean, I was telling somebody the other day, you know, Nellie Davis, when he was at FAU, they were a 9 seed, right? That felt like way bigger of a Cinderella slash underdog story than this Arkansas team, because it was FAU. I think if you're in the SEC, it's really hard to – I don't care what your seed is. It's hard to be that, you know, Cinderella story. I don't know if they – do people throw around the term Cinderella in college baseball? Because if they do, I'm sure that Ole Miss team a couple years ago, nobody's adopting them as Cinderella.
But see, like Ole Miss a couple of years ago in baseball, 3 years ago in 22, it felt kind of like this year's Arkansas team in that they were – a lot was expected of that team. In fact, that Ole Miss team had been number one earlier in the year. And then you talk about the you know, the parallels with this Arkansas basketball team. Injuries is what killed them throughout the season. And then they got healthy and they got hot, and it was like nobody wants to play this team. So I don't know if Cinderella's thrown around a baseball. I think maybe Fresno State got called Cinderella when they won the title in 08. But you hear it a lot more in basketball, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's just one of those deals where you can't be Arkansas with a Hall of Fame coach and – be America's Cinderella. You can be an underdog story, a fun one of a team that didn't look like they'd make the tournament and overcame all this stuff, but you aren't going to be Cinderella. That's designated to your, you know, your Florida Gulf Coasts, your what are some other great ones that have come up? St. Peter's, FAU. Mm-hmm. Those are the real Cinderellas. You can't be in the SEC.
Dunk City, Florida Gulf Coast, George Mason. Those are your Cinderella stories.
VCU was an awesome one.
Yeah, they were the only team that went from the first four to the final four under Shaka Smart. I wonder, and it's hard, I guess, probably for us to get a feel for this. I wonder what the feel is from people who are outside of Arkansas and outside of Kentucky as they watch John Calipari do this. I wonder if they're like, hey, this is a really cool story, or I'm sick of seeing that guy in March.
Yeah, I've been listening to a ton of podcasts this week to try and get that gauge, and I think that there's still a lot of people, and you cannot – nobody can downplay that the regular season for Arkansas, just as a package, what it was a disappointment compared to what they were expected to be. But I think that pretty much the whole nation is embracing now, at least I say the whole nation, like the college basketball world, is embracing that John Calipari, what he's done is really impressive. His coaching job in the last third of the season is honestly – like if you were just giving an award for the last third of the season, he could be in Coach of the Year talks. Mm-hmm. Like that's how good of a job he's done, but you can't just ignore what happened before then. So I think that, yeah, people are starting to – it's more just a fun story because of the fact that Arkansas, BYU, and Kentucky are still alive, I think. It was a really – like I am always hesitant when people say in sports – like, oh, this was a win-win, you know, when trades in the NFL or whatever. I mean, in this equivalent of a trade, I was so hesitant when everybody says, oh, this is a win-win for Arkansas and Kentucky. I'm like, that doesn't ever happen. Somebody gets on the wrong side. But so far, this has truly been a win-win-win. All three programs are in the Sweet 16. I don't think – none of them are in the same region, I don't think. So it's like – it's funny. They could theoretically meet each other, but so far, all fan bases have to maybe be getting to a point where it's like, let's call a truce. This worked out for us. This is this is going well. I mean, I guess the odd man out in this whole thing was USC.
I was going to say, if they were still alive, USC, they could make it a really interesting Final Four.
And I think SMU was like the first domino or they something. Were. So
Andy Enfield SMU, went from USC to SMU.
I think SMU might have lost in the NIT already or something. But yeah, no, for those three programs, the big dogs, I think, in that whole situation as far as college basketball history, it worked out pretty well.
Southern Cal's playing in some sort of your like first year postseason. Is it outdoors in Las Vegas? Is that right?
If it's outdoors, I didn't know that. It's called the Crown something. I think it's like owned by Fox Sports. I just cannot imagine. I've been sitting here thinking about this a lot because Fox Sports obviously big ties with the Big Ten, right? So they can, I'm sure that those programs are encouraged to play in this. But Eric Musselman, as soon as a season ends, it's portal go time. It is for him. Let's fix this roster for next year. I cannot imagine him right now getting ready for these guys to try and go play in a tournament. That frankly, I mean, I think that there's like a pot for whoever wins. Like there's a cash prize or something that makes there be an incentive. But I mean, how many of these guys that their teams are playing in there are in the portal right now? You would have to think that there's quite a few. So either way, weird tournament. I'm not a fan at all.
It's and indoor.
I'm sure Musselman is like, you know, I would assume with him it's a let's, you know, put a smile on your face walking on that court, act like we like this. But I know him. He's trying to get in the portal right now.
It's indoors, by the way. It's not outdoors. So there's that. Hey, Ethan, before we get you out of here, you sat down with Kelsey Musick the day that you flew out to San Francisco. What did you know, lately? What did you learn sitting with the Arkansas new women's basketball coach?
I'm very impressed so far. I'm going to be honest. I mean, it's one of those deals where you don't really know what to expect from a coach like that, and I think that can sometimes work toward their advantage. Because sitting down with her, it was clear how she has a vision. I think that with the new coach, I'm always looking for like, do they have an identity that their teams play with? Is the coach hungry to win? And she just kept on checking all those boxes to me as far as like, just she is driven right now to want to win. She's working fast and furious, and you can tell this has been crazy for her. I mean, she went from a week before she was sitting in her office talking to me to just prepping for a game. Like, it was a very fast turnaround for her. And I think it was one of those deals where you can tell that she and her family knew, like, the moment that an opportunity like this comes, like, we're going for it because we got to jump on it. And she's here, and she's very present.
You can read Ethan's story. It's on the front page of our website this morning. It says, Arkansas women's basketball coach Kelsey Musick talks defense, roster, staff, and more at wholehogsports.com. You can also read all of Ethan's coverage and Anthony Christensen there, too. You can read all their coverage from San Francisco. Leading up to tonight's game, you'll have a lot of reading time before Arkansas and Texas Tech get underway at 9:09 p.m., hopefully, in San Francisco, if not a little bit later there. Ethan, enjoy yourself today, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'm about to say, for me, it's a 7 p.m. tip, so I'll be, you know, for readers out there, hopefully you're ready with your cup of coffee in the morning for the story that I finished like 3 hours before you woke up. So.
Have you rode a trolley yet?
I have not. We've walked a lot. There's these Waymo cars that I really want to try.
They're the self-driving.
Nellie Davis and some of the team were saying that when they first got out here, they went on them. They look cool. They look really cool, and I kind of just want to try it. But I'm also skeptical because it's very hilly here.
Yeah.
It is extremely hilly, and yeah. I've my Apple Watch was so proud of me yesterday. I've burned some calories out here, Matt.
You better hope that robot knows how to hit the emergency brake going down one of those hills. You do that for me. I'm not getting in one of those cars.
I've seen enough of them doing it that I trust the process right now. They are a little bit expensive, though, but everything out here is so welcome to San Francisco.
Yep. Welcome to the Bay Area. Ethan, appreciate you being with us. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yep. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks to Ethan for being with us, and we appreciate you being with us on today's podcast. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow to talk about Arkansas, Texas Tech. Will the Razorbacks be moving on to the Elite Eight, or will the season be over? We'll talk about it on tomorrow's podcast. Hope we see you tonight at wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.